This is the EWN Radio Network.
Exactly like this is what I'm experiencing, and this is who I am. Because who you are is at such a different level of experience, and I would say be very, very careful to be sure that you're in charge of who you decide you are.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
It's time for Life Interrupted Radio, a show dedicated to practical skills for your mind, body, and soul. We're hoping we'll go in one ear and stay there. Here's the host of the show, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome to this special series we're featuring here on Life Interrupted Radio, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. The NIH estimates nearly 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder. To put that in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. You'll be as surprised as I was to find out what autoimmune entails. I brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted. So let's get started. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio. I'm your host, Sharon Saylor, for the evening. And, you know, it's my weekend. I hope it's the start of your weekend, too. As always, I'm here with a fabulous cup of tea. Today, I just decided to go with a wonderful green tea. I've had it before. It's got a little hint of orange in it, so it's kind of, I love it. It's just a nice, refreshing way to start my Friday evening and begin the weekend. We have a fabulous guest, and if you've listened to the last couple of shows, we've talked about willpower, goal setting, that we're half, you know, we're about 6 weeks into the year. Last week, we talked with Roberta Mittman about what might be stopping us if we haven't gotten to where we wanted to get, not only just with some of our regular goals, that type of thing, but also with our health goals. I really have been finding this whole idea of how the mind plays in healing fascinating lately. I've had numerous revelations during my process of healing where I'm going, isn't that interesting? I wonder how that's playing out in my physical world. And so I brought on tonight Bev Martin. She's someone who helps me explore those questions. She is just an amazing person. Let me tell you a little bit about her. Bev grew up in South Africa, and as a young girl, Bev realized that she had unique gifts. She had the ability to see into people in ways and to talk to them and find out ways of helping them to find their truly deep felt emotions and understand people at a really deep level. And I'm just so happy to have her here because her deepest joy is giving people, helping them understand greater meaning and even spiritual solutions, find those answers within themselves. That's what Bev is best at doing, is helping you find the answer within yourself. She's just an amazing questioner too, which we'll find out today as well. But I wanted her on because we've been exploring the idea of how the brain plays into it, as well as the other day on Facebook, my friend Danny shared this interesting quote, and it's, there's a huge amount of suffering that is generated not by the actual challenges of life, but by the fictitious problems that the mind generates. And that's by Eckhart Tolle. And I just thought, what better person to have on than Bev to talk about fictitious problems? Are they fictitious problems? Are they real? How can we determine if they are? And maybe it doesn't matter. So welcome, Bev. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Appreciate being here, and I love the way you come up with your topics. They're always fascinating, so thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Over the years, and this was just for a little back history for the listener, Bev and I have known each other for years and years, and she's always helped me uncover amazing things that have just propelled my growth. But when I entered the area of healing from autoimmune, I was surprised at how much my mindset, whether I was feeling sort of why me at first, to all of a sudden understanding healing, understanding growth, and uncovering how the mind talks to the body and how the body talks to the mind, all of that, and how it plays so much in our healing. And you, my dear Bev, have been instrumental in helping me understand that. So I wanted to bring you on to talk about this idea. Well, Eckhart Tolle calls it fictitious problems. That's an interesting phrase. And then I also find that in my healing, I've bumped into some of my limiting beliefs in my healing and, you know, how they've caused me a problem. Working hard to uncover them and go, is that true? And why do I believe that? So first off, I know you have an interesting way of looking at what I call limiting beliefs. Can you share with everyone what that might be?
Well, a belief, and we all have them, and, you know, I think of beliefs are like eyebrows. You know you have them, but you can't always see them, or you need someone else or you need a mirror in order to be able to go like, oh, wow. A belief kind of operates us. We can act as if it's true, and it's a story. It's a story that we told ourselves, and because it can be underneath our awareness, we don't even know that it's there. We just think it is true like gravity. And so when we recognize that there's a belief, and there are some very useful stories that are beliefs, there's some that are not so useful, and then there's some that, frankly, are quite harmful. As soon as we just get sort of playful with it, it's like, you know, if this were a story, what's this story? What am I telling myself? And I love it. You said, is it true? Because that's one of the key questions to recognize. Like, I'm acting as if this is so. Is it so? And more importantly, is it useful? We enjoy the idea that it really is a story, that we also may have adopted that story at a time in our lives when at that time it was useful, and we may have outgrown it. So it's just a kind of playful and light to consider, especially with health goals. What am I believing to be true? Because also, a lot of the people who I know who are dealing with chronic conditions and things like that, they're also running into other people's beliefs. Somebody else might say, well, it's just in your head. Just get over it. We've all heard that one. Thank you very much. Not so useful and also not true. For me, you know, a belief is a story, and a story can be fun. And as soon as we recognize that we get to make it up, that's when we can make some empowering choices for ourselves.
Well, I'm glad to bring up a couple of things. I made some notes as I was listening there. I just always love your insights. And one of them was need a mirror. And I love that idea as well. And I want to put a little extra on there because I often see you as my mirror. So it's very helpful if you have people in your world that can help you go, Sharon, let's look at that. I love the idea, the metaphor of the mirror, but I want to take that as a true metaphor, meaning it doesn't have to be an actual mirror. And you're saying mirror, mirror on the wall. Is this a limiting belief? But that people in your world can hold the mirror up to you and help you, guide you through, like, yeah. Is this a story you're telling yourself?
Right. And it can go in stages, you know, like if a certain story has been in place for a while, whether it's helpful or not, we can't really expect ourselves to just go, oh, well, I'll just get rid of that one and get a new story. Sometimes we need just like little incremental adjustments. And so when you're around people who have that belief that you want, it can be helpful. You know, they say you're the how important it is, the company you keep. And so when you're around people who do hold that to be useful for themselves, it sometimes you can just make that adjustment. And so that's the gift I like to think I'm giving my clients, that there's one particular belief about symptoms that I have that I can't expect my clients, especially if they've had and are dealing with chronic fatigue, pain, fibromyalgia, any of those things, I don't expect them to go, oh, well, there's a helpful belief. I think I'll just take it on. They're tired. They may be having trouble having hope that they will really, truly move towards their wellness in the way that they'd want. And so I see that as my service, and it's like, I will hold this belief for you, and we'll just gently aria, and I act as if it were true so that parts of that person can sort of line up behind it if it's right for them.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And I find that so true, having not only guides like yourself, but friends, as you say, we are who we hang out with.
Exactly.
And that will hold that higher self. And oftentimes I just ask people to hold the space. What can I do for you? You know, hold the space for healing. That's all I ask. It's just hold the space for healing. And I have found that extremely powerful and empowering to those in my world who might feel powerless. They want to help me. It's just a drive for them that they just want to get in there and do something. I think we all know people like that, that just want to fix it or do something.
Well, yeah. I love the way that you say that, you know, hold the space for healing. It gives somebody something positive to do, and it's really very helpful.
It is very helpful, and I find that they begin to also treat me in a different way. Instead of ailing, as healing, as in the process of going down the road of healing and being healthier. From that other space, they might have wanted to limit me this way, holding the space for healing. They've got that frame of mind that it's a forward movement instead of a backward movement or just holding space movement, you know, nothing happening.
Right. And you know how friends are, you know, where when one person is sort of flagging a little or failing and the other one's like, I've got this, I see it working, and we can kind of trade. So when someone is holding the space, you know that that space is held and that possibility still exists, whether you have the energy to do it for yourself or not.
Oh, absolutely. Another thing I wanted to just get a little deeper in and then we'll talk about symptoms, because that intrigued me too. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about the stories. And you kept mentioning that we tell ourselves. Talk a little bit about the idea. I can think of a few stories that when I was young, which I'll call are my familial or my cultural stories.
Yeah.
And yes, I tell them to myself. But I realize now, as I'm uncovering a lot of those, like, wow, I can think of certain members from my cultural groups that hold those same stories, and how powerful those are when a lot of people in your world hold the same story.
That's exactly right, because then we start to think, well, it must be true. You know, it's been held over time, and so-and-so wise person and so-and-so wise person also, well, then it must be true. And that's where it gets useful to go like, well, it may have been true or useful for that person at that time. Is it useful for me? Because there's two things that happen. Well, there's more than two things, but these are the two things that I'm thinking of now. Is one of the things that seems to come up over and over again with anything to do with the immune system is a sense of like, is this me? Or I'll hear people say, you know, this and this has been happening. That's just not me. And so it's almost as if there's a question mark above our very self, essence of our self. And of course, our immune system needs us to have a strong sense of self. That's how it knows this is me, and that little virus or that little thing floating through the air, oh, that's not me. So even though it may not directly in the moment affect the health of the immune system, it's still very, very useful to build a stronger sense of self as part of the immune system. It's very, very connected. What I'm building to is the story that we tell ourselves. If you and I picked up a book, we could tell by the cover, oh, this is a romance, or this is a horror story, or this is a drama. And so the type of story that we tell ourselves will create a certain number of filters that when you have a belief that you may have inherited, like you say, from it's in the cultural stream, it's like, well, isn't this true? It's been true for everyone. It also gives us a certain amount of filters on our thinking, because we like to be right. And so we look for evidence, consciously or not, of our belief story being true. So I'll give you just a ridiculous example of this, and I'll deliberately not use a health example, just a great example of just a ridiculous belief. And we only call it ridiculous because we don't hold it to be true. Otherwise, we'd go, well, yeah, that's right, right?
Yes.
So my dad had the belief, strongly held and frequently expressed, that people who wear hats when they drive are very bad drivers.
Oh my goodness.
To be fair to the drivers, most often if someone came to town in the city with a hat, they were probably a farmer, and they were probably in a brand new city and unfamiliar, and so they may have driven differently. But he would say, he would see someone driving with a hat, you know, wearing a hat while they drove, and he'd say, "See, look at that. That man drives like a fool. He's wearing a hat." And so when you think a belief is true, or you act as if it were true, then you keep finding corroborating evidence for your belief, and you go, "Yep, I knew it." And so that's when a belief can be unhelpful, if the story is an unhelpful one, because you can inadvertently keep getting evidence for it, and then it seems to make it more true. One of the things we want to do, and your audience, those who are so open to like new ideas and being conscious about these things, as soon as you say, you know, "Is that true?" you're giving yourself an opportunity to have a new filter, or even to say, "Huh, could the opposite be true? If it's a story, let's look at it from all points of view. Could the opposite be true? Could, you know, how some naturopaths might say they have a certain belief that is useful for a naturopath. You know, if you take a certain treatment, and ordinarily in the regular medical world, if you came out in a terrible rash, you phoned the doctor and you'd say, "I've just come out in a terrible rash." They'd go, "Uh-oh, something is wrong." Well, a naturopath typically has a different frame, and they'll say, "Oh, good, that's the healing crisis." For certain kinds of healing, they take that as a sign of healing. So what does it mean can also be a useful question as you sort of examine your story. Like, in the history of my family, that has always meant such. Is that true? Is that true for me? What else could it possibly mean? Those are the kinds of ways we shake up a belief.
Oh my goodness, so much to unpack there, Bev. Here again, I was taking notes, just totally mesmerized. One of the questions I wanted to ask, because I found this fascinating, let's go to back. You said this question at the beginning of that part there about, is this me? And I find it fascinating, not from we're talking about cultural familial types of stories, but that took me right to the place of the story with autoimmune. And I refuse to believe, much to the chagrin of all my doctors and healers, that it's not me. And I know that I'm not dispensing medical advice here. This is my belief. This is my story. And Bev knows this. I find it interesting that a lot of the way that medicine is done nowadays gives you new stories. Like, "I'm sorry, you have X." And then all of a sudden, you are no longer me, you're me with X.
Right.
And right. When you said that, I'm like, huh, I wonder how that changes our story. Because to me, it's an authority figure.
Absolutely.
Telling me. It's no longer just me.
Certificates on the wall and a white coat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's me with X, whatever that is.
Right.
And I'm thinking, my goodness, they're just implanted a belief in me that I took hook, line, and sinker. And I wonder how...
Luckily, not you.
Well, no, I tend to... My listeners know, I tend to question everything, which drives everybody crazy.
Well,
not just my...
Good.
Just not my medical practitioners, but friends and family, too. But I'm thinking about how that would obviously reframe your whole sense of who you are. And is this me? Is this me with X?
Exactly. Like, this is what I'm experiencing, and this is who I am. Because who you are is at such a different level of experience. And I would say be very, very careful to be sure that you're in charge of who you decide you are. There can be certain experiences that we have, like, you maybe experience something fairly challenging. We give people with illnesses new names. We call them a patient, or we call them the case of blah, 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 whatever the condition is. And it is very helpful to resist that label as if it had anything to do with your true, divine, beautiful, radiant, awesome self. even if what you are experiencing is, let's just call it yucky, that's a medical term.
Yes, I love it. That's a wonderful medical term. Yeah. I think a lot of us listeners with autoimmune go, oh, that's a perfect medical term.
Perfect term. Or the blah, that's another word I hear quite often for this. But like, you know, if you're going through something blah and yucky, goodness, you know, there it is. And having a strong sense of who you are will help you navigate it. The last thing you want to lose is you through it. And as you pointed out, it is a risk. It's a risk in two ways. One is because you've got experts giving us a story, like here's a story. The experts, they mean very well, but they do have a certain amount of power. And we have to just be careful about where we let it be helpful and where it's not. But when you get a story from an expert to say, I'll take what works and leave the rest. This is what I'm experiencing, and this is who I am. So part of the challenge is that people with chronic symptoms don't feel like themselves, you know. And so I will often see someone describe to me how they were before something happened, either a traumatic incident or the symptoms of themselves. They'll say, I used to be energetic and funny and social. And now, you know, because of the symptoms, this is my experience. And so some of what I do with this work and what I recommend to anyone is help yourself remember who you really are. And I feel like even a little emotional about this because it's so important. And sometimes what we're suffering from is a little bit of homesickness, like you're missing yourself. You're missing the you who used to dance and do more things, and some things have had to change because of those symptoms. And you just want to be sure that you stay in touch with the true who you are, even if for whatever reason you're not able to, like, do all those things, you know, right around your heart, you know who you are. Be very, very tender and protective of yourself, true self, capital S.
I'm glad you say that, and I love the way you say, this is who I am, and this is what I'm experiencing, as two distinct sentences.
Right.
That they are unique to themselves, and the experience that you're going through is not who you are. I just wanted to reiterate that, because that to me is so powerful in making sure that we stay true to who we are. And then, of course, you know me, Bev. I'm always, okay, so I'm experiencing this. Why am I here to learn this?
Right. What's the deal?
What's the deal here?
Right.
What am I going to learn? Because I'm not, the audience knows, I'm not one to sort of wallow around and figure this out. People say, Sharon, why did you, you know, you're feeling yucky. Why did you start the Autoimmune Hour and Life Interrupted Radio? You know what? Because it has to have meaning to me. Now, I'm not saying that for everybody, but this is my personality. It has to have meaning for me. And some of the meaning, as I was exploring my own healing, I said, wow, this is great stuff. And I've searched out different experts, such as yourself and the other people that have been on the show. And I'm, by the way, just a little plug, I'm continuing to search for more great experts. So email me over at lifeinterruptedradio.com if you know of a great expert to be on the show.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at sharonsaylor.com/radio gift. It's important to know, and maybe the word isn't why, but maybe we don't ever know that, but I'm just going to use that because I'm not sure of the right word here. But how do we make, can we make meaning?
Yes, and really we must. I love this about you, that you are so eager to go, okay, what's the story? What's this about? You know, what can I learn from this? Because we can know that oftentimes even horrible things that happen to people over years, you know, that person, very often, I certainly find it inspiring when I read a story when that person says, even though that lousy thing happened, what I learned was, or how I grew from it was, and I love learning that. Some of it is a little superstitious on my part. I think, oh good, if I can learn from that person's experience, maybe I don't have to go through that particular yucky thing, you know. And so, but there is this idea that even things that are challenging, and sometimes especially things that are challenging, there's a gift in it, there's a wisdom in it, there's a realization that can come. So what you and I both subscribe to is, you know, that the school of how long do I have to wait? Can I know it now? You know, and so I do a thing, and, you know, this is a funny thing, and I do sometimes get a bit of a funny look until we're right into it, is I ask the body, and really what I do is I help facilitate the client to ask their own body, because that's really even more important. But we have a chat. We say, okay, symptom. Thank you. And now that's the example of that belief that I hold that the client might not quite yet. And so the belief I hold that is useful, may not feel true, but it's useful, is that a symptom, a disorder, a condition that we're experiencing holds for us somewhere a gift. And I'm careful how I phrase that to someone who's sitting in front of me who's not feeling too gifted today, you know. So I don't yes. I don't expect them to hold that belief, but I hold it. And what happens when we do is we say, if it did, we ask that symptom in a very particular way. It's kind of a creative, relaxed, sort of a fun process, actually. We ask the symptom, you know, if you were here to bring me, this person, a gift or an awareness or a realization, how might I cooperate so that I get that memo sooner rather than later? Is there anything I can be doing now to understand the meaning of what's happening? And we want to know the meaning not so that we can go, oh, that's it, but we can then negotiate a little bit to change it. And I'll give you an example. So often, it seems to me, and here I'm making up a story based on a limited sample size, but it seems to me that over the years of working fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue and pain, people dealing with those things, they always seem to be really nice people, almost to a fault. And I think there's a pattern that often it is somebody who's very obliging, very willing to put themselves on the line. Perhaps they have done so, and their body has finally said, you know what? We need you to be paying attention to yourself, to conserve your energy, you know, whatever it might be, but it can happen that way. And so one particular person I'm thinking of, when we were looking at what it would mean to be well, she suddenly went like, uh-oh. And so a belief popped up for her, which was, if I am well, I must do for everyone as I did before.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm the one who drives you to the airport. I'm the one who cooks for Thanksgiving. I'm the one who moves you when you need to, you know. And so she had a belief that said, you know, when I am well, I must once again be at everyone's beck and call. And so the point is that symptom, as uncomfortable as it was, her fatigue, was trying to do something good for her, because she was a person who in the past could not say, no, I'm not doing that, you know, I won't. Her body made it so that she could say with integrity, I cannot.
Mm, powerful.
Yeah, I know. And so it was a real aha. So what she came to was recognizing that before she could get well, and this was the symptom sort of helping her, saying, look here, sister, I can keep doing this for you. I can keep making it true that you can say, I cannot. Or if you want to be well again, of course, it doesn't really speak quite so much like a hostage negotiator, but it says things like, if we ask the question, like, what needs to happen for me to have the wellness that I seek, that symptom can say, and this one did for her, you can't be running around for everyone like you did before. You can't burn yourself out at the expense of your body. The symptom might ask for proof. It's like, can you say no to some things? Can you continue to take care of your own energy even when you have it? In other words, rather than the symptom saying, you can only have this much, you know, when you have all the energy available to yourself, how are you going to spend it? And so we negotiated with that symptom, and she needed the skill of saying no. And once she had that, and she could convince her body that she would take care of herself, be mindful of her own energy and her own goals before she went running off and taking care of everyone else, and actually being quite a lot more mindful of her own intentions and goals and less of a caretaker for the world, her symptoms lightened up considerably. But then she knew that it wasn't just, I was sick and now I'm well. She knew, oh, this is how I stay well. So when you ask a symptom what it means for us, what it's trying to teach, if it could, it's quite fascinating, and it's absolutely unique to each and every person.
Oh my goodness, that is so fascinating, how the two, the mind and the body, are connected. Now, here's a weird story from a weird belief that I gave up years ago, but I still remember I had that belief because I remember the moment where I went, huh? How could I have that belief? But the belief that I held for years with the mind was separate from the body, and the body was unto itself, as well as what in my religious background was called the spirit. And somehow, somewhere in my head growing up, I thought there were like three distinct things that never spoke to each other.
Right. Trinity.
And I was like, huh. When I realized, no, they work together. They talk all the time.
Right.
So I clearly remember that moment, but I have to say I was 22 years old when I had that experience where I went, wow, I was believing that, but it's very obvious to me now that my mind speaks to my body speaks to my mind. You know, there is a spirit, they all talk. they're not three distinct things with walls. So it's funny to me, the things that we hold, and I can, as you know, Bev, I can name numerous times when I've bumped into those limiting beliefs and gone, oh my goodness, really?
Right. But usually when you do, that's a great sign of one that you've outgrown. You know, when you can go, really? You know, it was useful at a time, it's not useful now. Belief, we can outgrow one. I always like to think of like how there was a time when we may have believed pretty sincerely, on my part, in the tooth fairy. And now I'm not entirely certain that there isn't a tooth fairy, but it may not be so useful a belief for me now since I plan on keeping my teeth.
Well, the tooth fairy, though, to me, I'm like, I wanted to believe in the tooth fairy. There was a gain.
Exactly.
So then I really wanted that story to be true as long as the gain kept happening. But like you said, as an adult, I'm not having any monetary gain, so I can look at it a little more rationally.
And as an adult, we prefer to believe that it's actually more worthwhile to keep all that teeth in our head.
Yes.
I'd like to believe that to be true.
Oh my goodness, and that takes me into this whole place of expectations that we have around things. And I've shared before, but just to share with the audience that you and I have a mutual friend, Michael Grinder, and one time we were talking, and this isn't about all expectations, but I'll say ones that you hold about other people or things that aren't always useful expectations to hold. And he said, Sharon, just learn to make those expectations preferences and everything will be fine.
Mm.
And I loved that. That was a great reframe. Now, in all honesty, I have certain expectations about people, and funny I said the word honesty, because that's one of my expectations. That's a non-negotiable expectation. But then there's always expectations I have about other people that have a lot of room for negotiation. Once I learned to make some of those expectations preferences, like instead of getting all bent out of shape because they didn't behave a particular way or they behaved differently than I quote-unquote expected, it meant, my goodness, as you said, for the one person that you were talking about, things just became easier when I started letting go of a lot of those types of things. Can you talk about how we can reframe, what reframing is? And because I think that really plays into us unpacking those beliefs and how we can begin to look at all of the different parts of the story. And as you mentioned, there's always the opposite of the story that we're telling ourselves, and we need to examine that. Can you talk about how someone can reframe or begin to explore how to reframe a story?
Definitely. And it's really kind of fun once you do, because as soon as we've shaken up the notion that a belief is true, and we know it really isn't, it's just a made-up story, then we can have some fun making up a new one, a more useful one. And so one way to do that is to consider not how things are, but how we'd like them to be. And so it turns us a little bit more into solution focus. You know, so even if such and such, how would I like it to be? What would I like? And so it goes in with your idea of preference. I love that. It's like, you know, what do I prefer? Since nothing is really true, and that sounds very, you know, philosophical, but in this realm of belief, if all of it is a story, or all of it is something that we are navigating between what is so and what could be so, let's focus on the what could be so. You know, to use a ridiculous example, I'm thinking of Cinderella. And
okay.
I guess she's also a good example of where you are is not who you are, right? So when she's cleaning out the chimney, and she's dressed in rags, and she's working with the cinders, where she was in the fireplace, and who she was, and I'm going to assume that she knew all along, she knew that on the inside she was a princess. So one of the ways to keep mindful about, you know, what is happening here and how can I have a preference would be to have that question, what do I want to have happen? So, these are the symptoms, blah, 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 this is a condition. Okay, those are probably, you know, very real experiences that I'm experiencing. And given that I'm experiencing that, what would I like? And the question is broad enough, of course, it can range from, I would like a miracle, please, or I would like to have this experience with my friends be this way. And so it starts making us set intentions and has us consider, like, what is a preference? The next step from that, really, because of just the way things work, is once we have an idea of, you know, okay, this is how I would like that to go, we can then ask ourselves, how do I need to be to create that? Like, if that's my outcome, what's my part in it? Which changes it just from a wish, you know, oh, I wish this would happen. It's like, it becomes an outcome. It becomes, now we're taking our story by the ears and we're pointing it in the direction we want it to go, and we're becoming truly mindful about the results that we'd like to achieve. And so really, in a way, that's a way of saying we are becoming empowered rather than disempowered.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So what do I want to have happen? What would I like? And how do I need to be? I love that. I love that. Now, a little side story, because I find this so fascinating. One of my thoughts was always about having gratitude. Before I go to bed, I have a little gratitude. What happened that day that I'm grateful for? Or I like to wake up in the morning talking about grateful that I woke up, whatever it is. Gratitude. I started exploring an idea, though. Just popped into my head in the middle of the night. I don't know if this ever happens to anybody, but I have a notepad by my desk or by my bedstand, and I woke up in the middle of the night with this question in my head, and I wrote it down, and then next morning I asked myself it, and I actually texted a couple of friends asking them that same question, and they sort of wrote back kind of a deer in the headlight text back, like, huh? What do you mean? And the question that came to my mind, because it was, and I've been using it every day, and I found it very transformative. How do I need to be? I love that question too. And that is a longer term time frame to me question. But the question that came to me, what delights does this day hold for me?
Awesome.
I love that because to me, gratitude is sort of like in the past. Thus, I'm grateful for this. I'm grateful for that. And affirmations were like very much in the future to me. There was something about what delights, and it's the word delight.
It's a delightful word. Right. Yeah, that's a great word. But it gives you different filters, because if you're looking for delights, you're going to find them because you put your little flashlight on to say, like, where are the delights? Whereas if you're looking for, I forget who it was who said this, some author, I think her quote, I hope she was being ironic, but hers was, what fresh hell is this? Which is entirely the opposite. And of course, you know, you will find what you're looking for. And so looking for delights, like, you know, what delights? Oh, that's lovely. I'm writing that down. Wow.
Just resonated with me. Like, it makes me look for the positive. It's like, what delights does this day hold? And I texted a couple of friends, like, what delight does this day hold for you? And they wrote back, Sharon, are you okay?
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at SharonSaylor.com/radio gift. Fantastic, fantastic. Well, my dear Bev, I got a couple of quick more questions. We're coming up against the clock here, but I wanted to have you share tips because you've always shared some great ones for us. We've learned so much from you today about beliefs and reframing them and understanding what do you want to have happen and that we're in charge of our story and how to have people in our world hold space for us for that healing. What do you have as far as tips to stay focused? Because we get real energized having you here. I mean, whenever I talk to you, I just feel you through the phone lines here and I get re-energized and ready to jump out there and all of that and get going. But in all honesty, sometimes all of that wonderful wears off, fizzles out. What are some tips that you have that we can help just remind us to stay focused?
I know this phenomenon. I have had that happen too. It's like, wait, could I please have that author or that speaker like in my home? In this context in particular, and I think staying focused is really, really the goal, and staying focused on the goal, on the wellness, on the place where you hope to arrive. The opposite of that is what we typically do, because it's logical, but what we typically do is we say, well, when I've handled this, then I'll feel better. And when I've done this, this, and this, and this, it's like a strategy. When all of those ducks are in their row, then I will have this feeling that I want to have. And what we know is we can end up in a very long process of just keeping on working on the ducks. And what I recommend as a way of staying focused is stay focused on the destination. Even if, you know, several parts of your very well-meaning and logical body goes, we aren't there. No, but we know where we're going. And so I would recommend anyone who's dealing with an autoimmune issue or just not feeling as peachy as you know you would like to be when you are your true self, is make a map, a visual, a vision board, an image, a symbol of the destination. Have a word for it, because be as clear on what wellness is to you, what it looks like, what it feels like, what it smells like, what clothes you're wearing. Be very, very clear that you've got as much data about where you are going and focus on that. In Africa, there's a phenomenon that if you're traveling along and the road is dusty and you're walking and you're walking and you're just getting really, really tired, if you stop on the way and you say to someone, you know, like, are we there yet? Is that they will always say, it's just around the corner. You're almost there. And you may walk for another whole day to realize, well, it wasn't really, but a person would never say to someone on the road, oh, it's far. You got a long way. They will always say, it's just an African thing. You're almost there, because they want to empower you and give, you know, lift your spirits and make the journey more enjoyable. And so with that idea in mind, one way to sort of stay focused is to keep your eye on where you are going to, how it's going to feel, what it's like, because the body, when it comes to a feeling, even when you think of, oh, peace or calm or energy, your body has to kind of experience it a little bit to make sense of it. So I would say keep your eye on where you are going and don't put your eyes on your feet as you take each step. The destination is going to keep you compelled to go towards it is my suggestion.
Oh, and a fantastic suggestion that is. I want to add a little thing about the vision board. I love vision boards and all of that. I carry with me on my phone a little picture that's not really a vision board. And I know you said the where and the... this is sort of a bit of a where and a why. But I have a beautiful picture of my granddaughter when she and I went up and played in the snow recently. And I played all day long. And I've really surprised myself. I really genuinely had a delightful surprise. And I carry that little picture of us up there in the snow on my phone at all times. And like, Sharon, you did it. You did it. You played in the with your granddaughter in the snow, just like you used to with your own children. Sometimes, even if you can't carry your vision board with you, carrying a little picture or reminder is so helpful to get you through those times.
Great idea. It is the why. It's the reason behind it. And it's also, of course, one needs to dare hope. And in order to do that, we dare to hope. And that's an important part as well.
Oh my goodness. We could just keep going on and on, Beb, but
I know.
We're out of time. We'll have you back on for sure. But I want the audience to know how to get a hold of you. And also, you have a great little 10 minutes to clarity. Tell the listener how that they can find out more about you and your work and get your goodies.
It's on my website, which is bevmartin.com. And it's got a little thing. It just says, you know, download 10 minutes to clarity. And really what it is great questions. So it's got some good questions that help with that very idea of making a vision 3D. Like, how will I know when I have it? What will I hear? What will I see? So I'd love you to play with those questions with this idea of staying motivated and keeping inspired.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much, Bev. And everyone, it's bevmartin.com, spelled just like it sounds. So I don't have to spell it for you. And sometimes we get guests that I have to spell it, but your name is just like it sounds. So everyone, as always, have a great weekend, whatever your adventures. Enjoy.
The information provided on lifeinterruptedradio.com is for educational purposes only. What you hear, read, and see on Life Interrupted Radio is based on experience only. The information presented here should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on Life Interrupted Radio. You've been listening to Life Interrupted Radio. To learn more, listen to other shows, and gain free resources that can help empower your life, be sure to stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com. This episode is brought to you by mindfulnessinactionbook.com. To get your free 4-minute guided meditation to relax, refresh, and renew in just 4 minutes, and who doesn't have 4 minutes? Stop by mindfulnessinactionbook.com now. This guided meditation is in handy MP3 format, so you can use it anywhere, anytime. Download it now at mindfulnessinactionbook.com.
Do you want to be a better leader, have better relationships, become more self-aware, be a better communicator? Hi, I'm Sharon Saylor, best-selling author, professional speaker, and executive coach. And my life passion is empowering professionals to be the best that they can be. After years of working with professionals, I've discovered the 7 things nobody is telling you that can cost you your clients, sales, and even your career. And I want to give it to you free. You've heard my show, you know my passion, and maybe we'll be working together sooner rather than later. So go grab this ebook now to find out the 7 things that's costing you big time over at sharonsaylor.com/radio gift.
This is the EWN Radio Network.